It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowans may get teased a little bit about Jell-O salads and pork chops on sticks, but we do have a distinctive and delicious food culture in our state. And with me now is Darcy Doherty Malsby. She's written about our food culture in the new book, A Culinary History of Iowa, Sweet Corn, Pork Tenderloins, Made Rights, and More. Hello, Darcy.
Hey, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. I never miss an opportunity to talk about food because, you know, I say our state motto could be, if we don't eat, we don't meet.
Well, we should probably have a little snack here together right now, but we'll have to wait till 11 o'clock for that. And throughout this conversation, we will be talking about some of the iconic places to eat around the state. So if you'd like to join in with your favorite place to get some truly Iowan food, you can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Darcy, Iowa is a melting pot like so many other parts of the United States. And although we may look around and think this state isn't that diverse, but we do have people that came here from many different parts of Europe during settlement. And those people really shaped the food culture in the state of Iowa. Can you give me an example of some of the things that our early settlers, early European settlers, brought?
Absolutely. And I think what's unique about Iowa is we have held on to so many of those ethnic food traditions longer maybe than many other parts of the country. And I think that's really special. So you think about some of the things that in my area of Northwest Iowa, you come into this fall period, November, there would be places like the Badger Lutheran Church where you could go have a traditional lutefisk dinner. You can go to the church in Calendar, Little Calendar, Iowa, near Fort Dodge, and they in December have a meal where it's all Swedish and Norwegian food, where you can have lefse and kringla and krumkaka and anything like that. You'd be pretty hard pressed to find on a daily basis most places, but you can find it in these small Iowa towns if you know where to look.
Well, and I think it's interesting because a lot of these food traditions that do continue and endure in Iowa, these foods were special occasion foods, but now we have them available all the time, not to celebrate a special occasion, but to celebrate a heritage.
Yes, and celebrating that heritage and keeping that heritage alive, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because I see a lot of these traditions changing and in some ways starting to fade, because like you mentioned, the recipes for a lot of these dishes, maybe they're not complex, but they're time-consuming. And we've got a generation where maybe some people didn't even learn how to cook, or they just can't take the time to carry on some of these traditions. And so I wanted people to revisit this and say, there is value in some of these food traditions we have enjoyed as a culture for decades, and we don't want those to die out.
Now, in your book, you do share a number of recipes throughout the book, one for kolaches, another one for lefse. Where did you go to find recipes? I think all of us probably have some, if we have a family in Iowa that goes back quite a ways, we have some church cookbooks up on the shelves that probably have these recipes in them. But where did you look?
Well, the church cookbooks are great because that's, as an older lady told me one time, everyone brings their A game and puts only the best in the church cookbooks. But rather than just going to the books, I actually went to the sources, and it helped that I have been doing working as an ag journalist for 20 years covering the state of Iowa. And one of the stories I have always liked to write are the food stories. And so I have had the pleasure of interviewing a lot of these cooks. Some of them are no longer with us anymore, but people that have been so gracious to open up their family recipe boxes and share these recipes. So kolaches, for example, this is not in the book, but I did an interview in Pocahontas, which is not normally thought of as a region for that type of pastry, but they have a heritage over there. I did an interview with a gal there that gave me the scoop. And then also that Cedar Rapids area, of course, where we do tend to think of kolaches. I went to a bakery over there. They actually happen to be some relatives of mine, but got their recipe for how we make some of these delicious pastries. So most of the times it was one-on-one of me traveling the state and meeting with the cooks themselves.
Well, you also share a lot of Iowa history in here. And one of the things that you kind of dug into is the history of home gardens in the state. You looked into Earl May and the history of nurseries down in southwest Iowa, and also the start of 4-H. And I think in recent years, we've really seen a resurgence of interest in home gardening. But what did you learn from looking into the history of those home gardens, those kitchen gardens that, of course, were so necessary for survival and health?
Yeah, they are just such a great reflection of what it took to survive in Iowa in the early days, and it totally shaped how we eat. And you think about that. My role as an ag journalist is to help connect people, the farm-to-fork connection. And so what we can grow here obviously directly influences what we eat, and that extends to our gardens. And I love that story about Jesse Field Shamba down in southwest Iowa around that Shenandoah area. She was a country school teacher in the early 1900s, and she had this idea that we're doing a pretty good job of educating our boys and girls about the three R's, but we're not really teaching them the more practical things they're going to need to know to be successful in rural Iowa, whether it was hands-on crop production or how to grow a garden. And so she integrated that into the country school curriculum at the Goldenrod School, and basically created a national model that I still think makes a lot of sense today.
Of course, there's a lot of meat on Iowa plates throughout history and still today. And I talked to a chef a couple of years ago that had written about the way we eat in the United States, and he said one of the interesting things about our food culture in the United States, and I think this definitely goes for Iowa as well, is that it's not a cuisine built out of need, as so many other world cuisines are, but it was a cuisine that arose because of plenty. So celebrating the success of farming and the success of every year's harvest and taking the best of things. And that's something we really see in these iconic Iowa recipes, isn't it?
It totally is. I really love that concept of celebrating the abundance we have here. I've always believed we should be a culinary epicenter just because nobody knows more about agriculture than we do in Iowa. We do it well. And talking about the meat, I like to talk to friends from out of state, whether it's Minnesota, Wisconsin, New York, doesn't matter. I say, what do you think of when you think of Iowa food? And a friend from Wisconsin said, oh, pork. You Iowans eat a lot of pork. And I got to thinking, well, this book does have a lot of pork recipes, but, you know, that's one of the things that is uniquely Iowan, just like our pork tenderloins that they're as big as a dinner plate. If you go to a place like Florida or Oregon, they don't know what a breaded pork tenderloin is. And that is a direct reflection of our German heritage. I say it's one of those things you tend to find only in the I states, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. And so we do have this really spectacular food heritage here. And when people find out, when we tell the untold story of our culinary heritage, it's really a great story to tell.
So when you set out to find some really iconic Iowa recipes and share the stories of some iconic Iowa restaurants, what was your system? How did you set out to find them?
Well, part of it was just sheer necessity that I had 3 months to get this book project done, and I thought, oh, my goodness. Oh, so I drew on resources that I had where I'd covered for 20 years as an ag journalist, and then I started kind of mapping out the state because I wanted every part of Iowa represented. And I started thinking, oh, my goodness, we can't leave off Bright Box up in Fall Town. And we have to talk about Sturzing's potato chips in Burlington. And we can't forget the Palmer Candy Company and Twin Bings up in Sioux City. So I kind of made a game plan that way and started crisscrossing the state. And everyone was so gracious and so welcoming. And I even got to eat at a James Beard Award-winning steakhouse, Archie's Wayside up in Lamar's. And, oh, it was just a fabulous experience. And I know I have not even scratched the surface in this book. there's so much more to tell that I would sure like to do a volume two.
So in going to these places, I mean, some places you'd probably heard about and had been on your list for a long time, and maybe some places you'd already been. What do you think your biggest surprise was?
Oh, that would be the Northwestern Steakhouse up in Mason City. I had known about the Northwestern for a long time, but I'd never been there. And first of all, just when you go up to that part of Mason City where it's located, it's up in the northwest part of the town, and it's kind of in this industrial area on the edge of an industrial kind of middle-class neighborhood. And it's a nondescript building. It's a two-story building, but just kind of tucked out of the way. And they are known for having some of the best Greek steaks you will ever eat in your life, and they do not disappoint. This place has been around since 1920, and that Greek steak, oh my goodness, if I could figure out how to recreate the seasoning they used, I would be a happy girl. But it's definitely worth a trip to the Northwestern. They have amazing steak, and you get a Greek salad, you get spaghetti as a side dish. And I'm telling you, you have never had a meal like this, and you will get your socks, just knock your socks off that you can eat like this here in Iowa.
I'm talking with Darcy Doherty Malsby. She's the author of A Culinary History of Iowa, Sweet Corn Pork Tenderloins, Made Rights, and More. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have this comment from Barney in Grinnell. He said he wanted to make a suggestion for a good pork tenderloin at Cole's Restaurant in Slater. And Darcy, that's one of those food items in Iowa. There is a really strong competition to have the best pork tenderloin in the state.
Oh, yes. You got to get bragging rights. Those come out in October, and it's through the Iowa Pork Producers Association. We love a good tenderloin in Iowa, and I love it when people share where their favorite tenderloin is. I led a bus tour here a few weeks ago where we had people from Las Vegas to Massachusetts on board, and we went up into central Iowa, north central Iowa, and we stopped at the Lucky Pig in Ogden, which got bragging rights for the best tenderloin in Iowa in 2014. So I just love being able to show off the state of Iowa and give people a taste of some of these fabulous award-winning places.
Let's go to the phones. Peter's on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your comment?
Well, you know, having been starting in the restaurant business, I went to Tech and studied restaurant management some 30 years ago. And what's happening now in the restaurant business and the traditions, the new traditions that Iowa and Iowa restaurants are creating is amazing. It's a revolution in the culinary industry.
And I think we've all seen a lot of changes in recent years. Darcy, I mean, you're looking at history, but this is a really good time to eat in Iowa, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. He's so right. We are in the midst of this revolution, and I am so excited about it. I mean, what the new breed of chefs is bringing to the table is phenomenal. The locally grown and how they are showcasing the essence of Iowa. This, to me, is the fruition of what I always hoped Iowa food could be. We are finally becoming recognized as a culinary destination that's really doing some exciting things in the kitchen.
If you had just one thing to tell people from out of state about Iowa food, I mean, in many ways, this is a celebration of Iowa food for Iowans. But, you know, a lot of people dismiss us in a lot of different ways. If you could be the evangelist and tell people about Iowa food, what would you want them to know?
Get off the beaten path and get out and explore Iowa, and you will be surprised. And I can guarantee you will never eat better than you can in Iowa. You do not need to go to Peter Luger's Steakhouse in New York City. You do not need to go to San Francisco. They are wonderful places. But trust me, the best food is right here in Iowa because we grow it and we know it.
Is there anything that you're concerned about us losing in Iowa food culture? Because there are a lot of things that have fallen by the wayside over the years.
Very much so. And I see these changes happening right before my eyes. I especially see it in the small towns, and it really concerns me. I was just talking to a friend. I'm from Lake City. I've got a friend in the nearby town of Lanesboro. They have done a wonderful church supper there. They do it 2 times a year, actually. They have a chicken and noodle dinner in the fall, and they have a beef and mashed potatoes dinner in the spring. And she was saying that this might be one of the last go-rounds for this because the church members are getting older, fewer people to help. And I just thought, this is how this happens. These culinary traditions, we've had them for years. We take them for granted. And then one day they can just come to an end. So please go out and support your local restaurants. Go support these local church suppers and fundraisers and things like that where you get this remarkable taste of Iowa. Don't take this stuff for granted because it takes a lot of care and a lot of work to keep the traditions going. And your support does matter.
And of course, a lot of the best Iowa food is homemade food. Is there one family recipe that you're doing your best to try to keep alive?
Oh, that would be the caramel roll recipe that's in my book. That is what I remember from when I was a kid at the Lake City School District. I had no idea how blessed we were growing up in the 80s, where we had a lot of retired farm wives that were the school cooks. And they made everything from scratch, including these amazing caramel rolls that they would serve on chili and cinnamon roll day. And it's time-consuming. It takes some practice to make these caramel rolls. But if I can master the caramel rolls, I will feel like I have accomplished an important mission in life.
Well, Darcy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Darcy Doherty Malsby, her book is A Culinary History of Iowa, Sweet Corn, Pork Tenderloins, Made Rights, and More. And this also seems like a great moment to mention that the Great Iowa Potluck is coming up next Wednesday. Next week on the talk shows, it's Iowa Week. We'll be celebrating artistic Iowa, but we'll also have a very real food celebration Wednesday, September 21st, from 5:30 to 8 at Terry Trueblood Recreation Area in Iowa City. Bring a dish or two to share. We would love to see you there. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, Dennis Reese, and Emily Woodbury. You can get in touch with us anytime. Please send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @IPRTalk. I'm there too @CharityNebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.